Art Section, National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2, with Madeline Talberg and Virginia Batts interviewing Juliet Greller on December 7, 1993. Judy, relax and enjoy this experience. Will you start? You want to test that?
Is it just ask one?
I want to test the machine to be sure it's recorded.
To ask for her address to see if her voice picks up.
Judy, will you please give us your address?
I live at Park Plaza Apartments, 128 North Craig Street, Pittsburgh, PA 15213.
Fine.
No, you keep going.
Okay.
Let's start, Judy, with telling us a little bit about your early years, your family and your siblings and parents and so on.
Well, I was born on March the 8th, 1918, the first child of Arnold and Fanny Dordemont. My parents had moved here from Chicago in October of that year. My mother was pregnant, and they came to be the managers or superintendent and mistress, as you would call them, of the Gusky Orphanage. I had a sister, Florence, who was born 2.5 years after I was, and a brother, Jimmy, who was born about 2 years after Florence. My early childhood, as far as I can remember, was one of just complete happiness. I really feel that I was privileged because I had a wealth of playmates. I had all the children in the orphanage to choose from to be my friends, and they were my friends. We had a separate house on the grounds. The orphanage was comprised of several buildings, a main building, a boys' dormitory, a girls' dormitory, large playground, ball field, tennis court, etc. And although we had our own separate house, we really participated in the activities of the children in the orphanage. I mean, I took dancing class with them. I took Hebrew class with them. I played with them, baseball, tennis, roamed the woods. And it was an excellent childhood because when I use the term, a little bit of neglect goes a long way. I was never neglected, but my parents were so busy taking care of all of these other children that none of the Dordelbaum children felt that they were so very important and were being privileged. Rather, we had to perform just as the children did. And I can recall an instant once where you weren't supposed to take fruit from the fruit trees until they were ripe, and then they were distributed among everyone. Well, I myself and a couple of the girls did take fruit off the trees one day, and I can still recall having to stand with the fruit that I had taken in the large dining room in front of all the children to show that I had done wrong. We were punished the same as the children. Privileges were removed. There was never any spanking of us or any of the other children. And so my early years were pretty much confined to that activity. Went to school in the neighborhood, walked to school. I still had some special friends at the orphanage. As I got older, I made other friends. One friend in particular, not a Jewish girl. Her name was Betty Zimmerman. It's now Betty Elstee. We are still the closest of friends. We got to know each other in fourth grade, and I still participate in all her family activities as she does in mine. She lives out in Allison Park.
Your description of the orphanage is very interesting. Was it an entirely Jewish orphanage?
Absolutely, in a Gentile neighborhood. So that all of my friends in school were non-Jewish. The children at the orphanage were. I guess it was about we had services there. My father conducted services every Saturday. People who were on the board of directors would come for services. And they would come for the Passover. I still remember the Passover and my mother trudging into town weeks on end, buying clothing. Every child had a brand new outfit for the Passover. Of course, we always complained that my mother was busy clothing the children and never worried about getting us new clothes, but I guess we weren't deprived. Passover was a very big thing that I remember. To me, it's still the most important Jewish holiday because it was a beautiful thing. My father conducted this service when I was very young. There were almost 100 children in the orphanage, and they all sat at the in the dining room, and then we had a separate room, but it was open to the rest of the dining room, where our family ate with all the board of directors. I still remember Leo Lehman eating maybe a dozen hard-boiled eggs. I still remember Lewis Kaplan coming. I mean, these were all the people I knew as I was growing up.
Were these services conducted with any difference between Orthodox, conservative, or Reform?
Oh, I would say it was a Reform service, same as we conducted with Shalom, used the same books. Primarily, the board members were affiliated with Rosh Hashanah Temple, so that that was the way it was done. We used the Hebrew Union prayer book in the regular services also. So until I was about, I would say, 12, 13 years old, this was my life. And then I guess my parents decided I should meet some more Jewish people, so they sent me to Rosh Hashanah. And that's where I made my early friends that I'm still friendly with today. I mean, in those days, I was friendly with Clara Weil, who later became Clara Frank, Aronel DeRoy, who later became Aronel Gruber, Betty Rosenfield, who became Betty Foster, and these were all my friends. Jean Kalish Samuels, Margie Stern Spear Adderson. So that then, as I got a little older, they took me into their sorority, the SOPS. So that's how I got to really know all the people in Squirrel Hill. And that's how I met boys and was dating.
And you traveled from the orphanage to Squirrel Hill to
engage. And if it was too late at night when I was dating, I would sleep over at someone's house. And that was, of course, before I was, you know, driving. Once I learned to drive, I had great mobility, and that to me all my life has been very important, to have freedom of mobility.
Say you went to school on the north side.
I went to Perry High School.
In the public high school.
Went to Perry High School. I graduated summa cum laude. I really wanted to go away to school. My father promised me if I stay home, he'd buy me a car, but he never bought me a car. But I did have use of the family car because Dad didn't really need it during the day. So I traveled back and forth to the University of Pittsburgh. I had an honor scholarship. I guess after the first semester, my parents really never paid for my education. I was at the University of Pittsburgh. I went to summer school there 1 year. I also went to Wisconsin 1 year, so that having started in February, I graduated in June class, 3.5 years. Again, I kept it a secret until graduation day. I graduated highest in the class. I had a wonderful time in college. I had a lot of friends, had a lot of dates. I never went sorority. I won't mention the person who rushed me, but I'll never forget that she said to me when she rushed me, and if you become an AE5, we can get you dates. Well, if that was the basis for joining AE5, I didn't need it, and I had all these other friends. I majored in psychology and sociology, and a double major, a minor in philosophy. I loved school. I loved to study. I always have. But I did it rather surreptitiously, which I'm ashamed to say, because in those days you didn't want to appear too bright, or the boys might not take you out. As I look back, I only have one regret, that I didn't have proper vocational guidance. I went to work at Gimbel's Department Store. They were supposedly training me to become active in their personnel department. I went from department to department, stood on my feet all day. If I made $15 a week, I was very lucky. And I really found it not a bit stimulating and quite boring. And it was apparent for the short stay I had in the personnel department, the woman that I worked under, that she really did not want anyone to assist her, nor was she interested in training anyone to replace her. So after about 5 months of that, I quit. And then I decided I was going to go back to graduate school. So I did, the following fall, go to Carnegie, was then called Carnegie Institute, and I got my master's degree in social work. I was there for 2 years.
Are you referring to Carnegie Tech?
I said Carnegie Institute of Technology, yes.
Yeah.
Which is now Carnegie Mellon. I loved it there. It was a very small class. It was a very intimate group. And there, too, after the first semester, they gave me a full scholarship. So actually, I guess my education was all pretty easy for my parents. When I finished there, I went to work at what was then called the Children's Service Bureau. It later was, after I left, became part of the Family and Children's Service, Pittsburgh. I was a caseworker. I was taking care of neglected, deprived, mistreated children, also doing a little bit of adoption work. I always liked my work, per se, with the client. At the Children's Service Bureau, I really liked the people I worked with. During that period of time, I was very active socially, going out a great deal, and very frankly, that was very, very important in my life. Men have always been an important facet of my life. I find a conversation with them a bit more stimulating than with a group of women. Women individually, I find very enjoyable. I've never been what we would call a groupie. I don't like to be confined to certain groups of people. I like the stimulation of many other groups. I was dating at that time several people, as you well know, Jenny. And I finally decided that I was going to move to Chicago, and my sister's husband at that time was in the service, and she didn't want to be alone. My father and mother had already retired, and I went to live with her. I remained in Chicago for 1 year. I worked for an agency called the Scholarship and Guidance Center, which did counseling not only on a vocational basis, but almost psychiatric counseling for children that were having problems in the public school. And at that time, I had been already dating my future husband when I was in Pittsburgh, and I then came back to Pittsburgh to get married. Now, looking back on my career, I will say, which my husband said to me many years later, that I had made a mistake, but I had no regrets. Had I had proper guidance, I would have gone into medicine and become a child psychiatrist, because that was my basic interest. But truthfully, in those days, at least the way I perceived it, the girls that I knew who went to medical school were not very interesting socially or intellectually. They were students and limited themselves to that, which might have been an unfair judgment on my part. And I also enjoyed my social activities so much that I wasn't ready to make that commitment, and no one ever encouraged me to. Okay.
Did you have any extracurricular activities concerning the arts or community activities?
While I was in college, really not particularly. I was always involved in athletics. I rode horses, I played tennis, I swam. I did those sort of things. But even in college, I mean, I never really got involved in school group activities. As I said, I went to my classes, I enjoyed studying, I did that a great deal in the afternoon so that I could go out at night. And that was the way my pattern of life was. I came back to Pittsburgh, I got married. I pretty much gave up a lot of my social activities because I had quite a responsibility in my household. My husband's mother, who was an invalid, lived with me. We had nurses around the clock for her. My husband's nephew, who was about 5 years younger than myself, lived with me. He was going to medical school at the time. We had an office downstairs. It was separate, but it was the front part of the house. There was a separate entrance. So that I was responsible for an awful lot of people. I did all the cooking. I managed the household. I more or less managed the office without being in the office. I saw that it was maintained properly, that it was cleaned properly, and that sort of thing. I never participated in my husband's office activities. He didn't wish it, nor did I, so that there was never any concern that I was involved in any patient activity. So that went on for several years, and after I was married about 3 years, I did have a child. By that time, shortly before my child was born, my nephew, my husband's nephew, moved out because we needed the room, and I still was very involved with the nurses downstairs and primarily upstairs with my mother-in-law. And it wasn't until my son was about 3 years old that it was becoming very difficult in the household for a child to be raised because of the problems with my mother-in-law, who had a room right next to his, and there was an awful lot of activity in the daytime and the nighttime. And it was at that point we put my mother-in-law in the home for the aged. But she did have her own nurses, which we provided there. I guess it was at that stage that I started to go back to being active in communal affairs. And I can't tell you chronologically exactly what happened, but over the years I was very, very involved in the sisterhood. I was on the board for many years. When I got to the point that they wanted me to be an officer, a vice president, eventually move up, that's when I said no more. Because I like to work. I don't enjoy being the head of something where I'm responsible for people doing a job that they may not do. I mean, that has been my experience. So I'd much rather have a job and do it myself. I became active in the Women's Association, the Symphony. I was on the Women's Association board for many years. I was on the National Council of Jewish Women board for many years. I was on the board of the Vocational Rehabilitation Center, and I was in charge of their counseling department so that I was making the contact with the workers there. I was also on the board of the Planned Parenthood Association. So I did this for many, many years, and I guess it wasn't until I was married for 25 years that my son one day said to me, "Don't you get crazy running from meeting to meeting?" And I said, "To tell you the truth, I pretty much had it." And it was about that time that we were having the riots. And my husband was really not enjoying my going out to meetings at night by myself in a convertible with sometimes the top down. So, one night, my son said to my husband, he was visiting, he had gone away to school when he was about 16 to prep school and college and so forth. He said, bluntly, "Why don't you let the kid off the farm?" And my husband said, "I never said she couldn't work." He forgot that after we were married about a year, I was offered a job over at Carnegie Institute of Technology, now Carnegie Mellon, when Irma Meyerson was taking leave to have her children. and they offered me that job to teach over there. But my husband at that time said to me, "You're not married, I don't want you to work." But when he said, "I don't care if you work," I did get a job. And I guess it was in 1969, after I moved out of the house and moved into the apartment building, that I took on a job at the Reeves Child Care Center as their intake supervisor. You must realize I'm very work-oriented. I'm fast. I like to get a job done. I like to do it well. I don't like to fool around. So I said to them, "I will do this job for you, but I will only work 2 days a week." And I gave them a full-time job and 2 days a week. I did all the intake, interviewing of clients who wished to place the children. I made the determinations whether they were to go into group care at the center or to be placed in individual daycare homes. I interviewed all the women who applied to be daycare mothers and determined whether I felt they were good material. And that's what I did. I did that for 6 years when my husband passed away suddenly. And I, at that point, really didn't know whether I was going to continue. And then I decided to keep some sort of routine and regulation in my life. So after staying away a month after my husband died, I did go back to work. In the meantime, my parents had moved to Florida. And over the years, I at least went to Florida at least 3 to 4 times a year to visit them. Or they would come up in the summer and visit with me for a couple of weeks. As they got older and had physical problems, I would say I was going to Florida at one point. I remember being in Florida 10 times in 12 months when my father was ill. I guess you would say that whether it was just being the oldest or temperamentally so inclined, my brother and sister did assume responsibilities, but it was always just more or less taken for granted that Juliet, Judy as I was called, would be the one to manage things. And as I look back on it, I have the wonderful satisfaction of knowing that my mother always said, even to the day that she was very sick and dying, "As long as you're with me, I know everything will be all right." And that was the role I played. That was the role I was assigned. You never have to worry about Judy. She'll take care of things. There were times that I was sort of a little jealous of the fact that I thought in many ways more affection was shown to my sister, who perhaps had greater needs. And, you know, it's the old story of the greasy, squeaky wheel gets greased. But I really didn't mind it. I figured that, you know, she was supposed to be the pretty one and I was supposed to be the smart one, and that's the way it was. And anyway, I never felt like the ugly duckling, however, being very honest about it.
Tell us a little bit about your son. I'd like to know his full name and how you interacted in the family.
Well, my son, called Myron Coleman Grauer, was born when I was 29 years of age. I wanted a child very badly, and at that time I was very delighted that it was a boy, because my friend Betty, who I mentioned to you before, had a little boy, and that was the first child of a friend of mine that I really knew intimately. So I was delighted to have a boy. You want me to stop?
Yeah.